Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
Sorry.
What is going on?
Oh, that was just the sound of the Pac-12 blowing up. Sorry. I had to...
I thought I messed something up.
No, that was just...
What did it break?
Yeah, no, that's just the... Someone, you need to hear it. That's what it sounded like yesterday when USC and UCLA decided to take off and head to the Big Ten, leaving behind them a wake of destruction for anybody left in what used to be the Pac-12. It is going to be quite the mess for everybody else to clean up. And I got maybe six or seven thoughts on this that I kind of wanted to run through. Brock will join us at 7:45. Obviously, I'm excited to talk to him about it.
Yeah, my mind went immediately to Brock.
Of course, yeah, kind of get his take on what's happening here. So let me try to run through it quickly. And you know, look, I'm not Mr. College Football, but in some ways, it kind of gives me a little bit of distance from the whole thing, right? This is not my passion. So I kind of look at it from maybe a slightly different angle. I'll start here. Look, it's not just that UW and Wazoo and everybody else got left behind. It's that they were totally blindsided by it. And that's one of the things that jumped out to me yesterday, that they didn't know it was coming.
Like the Colts leaving Baltimore.
Wait, what? You're leaving? That's got to hurt, right? Like, imagine, like, remember being like a teenager or something, and you find out, it's one thing you find out you're not invited to the party, and then you can kind of figure out whether or not you want to go and this and that. It's another thing to find out the party already happened.
Yeah.
Wait, the party happened and no one told me?
Yeah.
I'm that unpopular that nobody even wanted to tell me there was a party? Oh, man, my friends hate me.
Are you speaking from a place of pain?
Anyway, don't make me play that explosion again. You found out after they left that they were even leaving. That's a problem. You weren't even part of the conversation. So you can go beg now and see if you can get let in, but you're literally knocking on the door of a party where all your friends are at and going, "Can I come to the party, please?" Like, it's an embarrassing situation. Maybe you can bring a six pack and that's enough to get you in if you got a fake ID or something. I don't know. Maybe you can sort of super bad the whole thing, but I
and
fear
if
for you.
In case it's Oregon and UW, right?
It's probably those two, right? And everybody else, unless it's the Arizona schools. I don't know. I think UW and Oregon, UW especially, fits from kind of an academic perspective, et cetera.
And the academic prowess.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I don't know exactly what that looks like. They're obviously the two most historic programs left. But let's be clear, and I don't say this with any malice. I just say this from more of a national look at it. Oregon's got a national brand that Washington does not. Washington has history that Oregon does not. But Oregon today has a national brand that UW does not. And I say that as a Northeasterner. And you go, "What do you know? You're from the Northeast." That's how I know. Because people back in the Northeast, where a lot of these decisions and money and college sports, et cetera, gets made, they know about, they've heard of Oregon. They know about Oregon, the crazy colors and the, you know, all of that. Wait, is it Washington or Washington State? Which one is it? Which one's in Seattle? Which one did Drew Bledsoe go to? I kind of forget. And that is not necessarily a great sign for this whole thing. So that's sort of point number one. Point number two, Larry Scott absolutely ruined this conference. He overplayed his hand. So this is my sort of points two and three work together, because Larry Scott deserves a tremendous amount of blame for what happened yesterday. And unfortunately, and this is hard to hear, so do some fans around this conference who aren't as passionate about their teams as people in other parts of the country. This isn't at the SEC. This isn't the Big Ten. It doesn't have the same level of passion. And I think that's, of all the mistakes that Larry Scott made, and there were many of them, one of the biggest is that he bet that fans in the Pac-12 were going to be as passionate as fans in the other conferences. It's why he played hardball with DirecTV and others, because he figured his fans would go the extra mile to make sure they could see the games. I have sound of it. This is from 2016. This is 6 years ago when Larry Scott helped ruin the conference.
They can now, if they're really Husky fans, for $25 a month.
Yeah, you can go watch them. You just got to pay $25 a month. This is the Pac-12, Larry. This isn't the SEC. Yes, the fans might have more money, but they're less willing to spend it because they're not as invested as they are in Alabama and Arkansas and Louisiana and Georgia and Florida and Tennessee. They're just not. And he bet that they were. And it screwed them. There's no other way to look at it. And it ended up costing them today because their media deal stunk. They weren't able to leverage anything. They weren't able to grow a new generation of fans. And they are now miles behind the other conferences in terms of money, in terms of attention, in terms of national brand, and eventually in terms of talent, because all those kids started going elsewhere. Oh, and by the way, throw NIL in there. And now the places where there's a lot of passion behind their school, people want to spend the money to go make their school great. They don't want to do that around here. So you are looking at a massive, massive shift. And Larry Scott deserves a lot of the blame. And Pac-12 fans, I'm not blaming any one fan base, are part of that story by not being as passionate. And I'm not blaming anybody for it. You're not doing anything wrong. It's just not as big a priority for enough people. And if you're sitting here going, but I love it and I care and I do all those things, great. It's not about you then. I'm not talking to you or about you. But there aren't enough of you the way there are in those states that I just mentioned.
Then how do you fix it?
I don't know that it's fixable.
Really?
I don't know that it's fixable. I don't see a great path forward for UW, as I said, other than begging to be let into the Big Ten. Maybe it works out. I don't know what you do if you're Wazoo.
I was going to say, what do the other schools do?
Look, I said this a couple weeks ago. I'm starting to believe that you're going to end up with a very small number of elite power conference schools, and everybody else is going to be in a second tier. And it's not comfortable, and nobody wants to hear it, and I'm being a jerk, and this and that. Kyle Brown got so mad at me when I first brought this up in the sports pit a couple of weeks ago, because he's a huge college football fan. And I'm sorry, I'm not trying to make it sound like it's your fault or you haven't done it. Wazoo might not get to play at that level anymore. They might not. NIL has changed the game. UW might not get to play at that level anymore. We'll find out. But the teams where everybody, where they have a fan base that is that obsessed with them and boosters and money. And look, Seattle has the Seahawks and the Mariners and the Kraken and this and that. What else do they have in Birmingham?
Right.
It is everything.
Right.
Right?
I know that.
I mean, Auburn and Alabama are everything in that state. Tommy Tuberville got elected senator, for God's sakes. That's because of how important college football is there. Nick Saban is by far the biggest name in Alabama. If you walk around and ask people who the head coach is at UW, what percentage of people know the answer? Sorry. So I know he's new, but that's unfortunately the reality of the situation. The only way to save this, Justin, since you asked, is you need an NCAA commissioner. And that's never going to happen. I said a couple of weeks ago the college football system was not set up for this amount of money. I've always believed that the kids needed to be paid, but I have also similarly said the issue is that college football was not set up for this. It was set up for the kids at one school to play against the kids who went to another over 100 years ago, right? Oh, you go to Yale? I go to Harvard. Let's play football against each other. Cool. That's how it was started.
Mm-hmm.
It was, and then it developed and grew over the years, and it was never meant to be full of this amount of money. The kids who go to, the University of Southern California are not meant to play every year against the kids who go to Maryland, because that's insane. It doesn't make any sense. It's not regional. There's nothing about this anymore that makes sense, because it's all about money. 100% about money, and it always has been. It's just that all of a sudden that money's going to have to start filtering elsewhere other than to just the bigwigs, and guess what? They want their money. So now all of a sudden you see all this happen.
So did TV money start it?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely 100% yes. And once the TV money was there, it was unfair not to pay the product. And once you pay the product, bang, the whole system doesn't work anymore.
Got it.
But unfortunately, the system wasn't really working before, even if it felt like it was. There was a huge group of people that weren't getting what they deserved out of it. It was a system built on something that was fundamentally unfair. So I know that nobody wants to hear this, and I'll stop talking about it now because I'm a big jerk and I don't like college football and this and that. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry I have to say things like this. But these next couple of years are going to be super awkward, by the way, because this doesn't take place until 2024.
And has it been approved yet?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. This is happening. Now, it doesn't mean it's over because there could be more. And, you know, this landscape is like, you know, there's aftershocks and it's constantly shifting. But it is a terrible day. A terrible day for football fans, college football fans in this state of Washington or of Washington, especially of the Cougs. And I feel terrible. I know so many great Cougs who do love their team and are so proud of it and everything else. And I don't know what to tell you. I wish I had good news for you. I don't. I don't think a Big 12, Pac-12 super conference is in any way powerful enough to make it relevant. I mean, it continues. It goes on. You can still go out and support your team and have fun getting drunk before a Cougar game and, you know, hanging out in RV1. But I don't see them as ever being a part of a power conference the way it's always been.
Sad day.
It's a very sad day. There's no doubt. All right. Coming up next, we'll go through everything you need to know. And then I went down to Tacoma yesterday to talk to Jared Kelnick. Play you that interview coming up at 7:30 before Brock. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, when the bats come out, the Mariners get to just keep on rolling. They scored early. They scored often last night en route to an 8-6 win. Usually, hard to find any highlight that's going to top another mammoth Julio blast, but Cal Raleigh, he managed to find a way.
The set and the 1-2 pitch, the Raleigh swing, and a fly ball deep center field. Bolt going back. Morty track to the wall off his glove. Two runs are going to score. Santana scores. He's waving in Toro. Toro will score. Cal at third. The throw to third hits him in the back. He's heading home. He's going to score. Holy smokes, everybody scores. Cal Raleigh with a mad dash around the bases.
That guy was panting afterwards. His first triple of the year, possibly the first triple of his life. Little League home run races all the way around. He went 2-for-4 with a couple driven in. It completed a ridiculous month in which Cal hit 6 home runs, 8 more extra base hits, and had an OPS of 925. Not bad production from a young catcher. Meanwhile, Julio did hit his 13th.
The 1-0. Swing, and it's clubbed out to center. This is on its way back to the batter's eye. Gone, Julio! Home run! Straight away center field, mashed. He has given the Mariners a 2-1 lead.
Dylan Moore hit his 4th while filling in for J.P. Crawford, who, by the way, elected to start his suspension after having it reduced to 4 games. Ty France, one step closer to the All-Star game, made the runoff against Vlad Guerrero, so congratulations to him there. Still no timeline, though, for him to return from his injury.
I don't really have the skill set to determine how concerned to be, but you know, I do know that he experienced a very real injury, and Ty's a very tough player. He's a tough guy. I know he's in there working his tail off. And I would suspect that we will see Ty back in the lineup before most guys would get back. That just is, again, it's his personality, and you don't change that. But, you know, he did experience a pretty significant injury.
Yeah, he sure did, so hopefully he'll be back. I'm hoping by the All-Star break. I think that's sort of the timeline that I'm thinking about. Back at it against Oakland tonight, Marco Gonzalez and James Caprillion.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Yeah, what a mess in college sports yesterday. Natural disaster, certainly for the remaining 10 schools in the Pac-12, as USC and UCLA agree to abandon ship and head to the Big Ten, which now has 14 schools, if you're keeping track at home. LA, not only the biggest market in the conference, but USC by far, if not the only real national draw. So without those two schools, really hard to envision a future for the conference that is still viable. So what does it mean for UW and Wazoo? Nothing good. UW could I guess, try to band together with Oregon and beg to be let in also. The whole conference could, I guess, merge with the remaining dregs of the Big 12 and form some sort of big PAC conference or something. But I don't know if there's enough there to be viable in any sort of a major way. So not a lot of great options. As for Wazoo, I think that second one might be their best shot. But look, the truth is the last decade of media darkness and the refusal to cater to fans has deeply hurt this conference, and Larry Scott very much to blame for its demise. UW can try to offer its media market. Seattle's number 12 in the country, but I don't know if that's going to be enough. Rich Eisen yesterday said, hey, get on board or get left behind.
But I'm telling you, the battle lines have been drawn for quite some time. The NIL world is only serving to accelerate it. The fire has been burning. The embers are apparent. This NIL stuff is an accelerant. Okay? That's what this is. It is coming. The Super League of college athletics is coming. And you better get on board, because if you're not going to get on board, you're going to be left behind.
Couldn't agree with him more.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, it sounds like Deshaun Watson's hearing has come to an end yesterday after 3 days of testimony. Former Judge Sue Robinson now will consider the case and make a recommendation. Could take some time. And of course, either side can then appeal her ruling. But no matter who appeals, Roger Goodell would then be in the sole position of deciding justice. So that makes a tremendous amount of sense and isn't a complete sham. By the way, sham would be a good word to describe Kevin Durant's time in Brooklyn. Didn't go so well. Star forward yesterday requested a trade after a largely forgettable run for the Nets. With Kyrie taking off and Durant looking to bail, not going to be much left in Brooklyn. Ben Simmons and a whole lot of nothing. It's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Mike Salk Show. All right. So yesterday, I drove down to Tacoma. A beautiful drive at 2:30, let me tell you. And I got to spend some time at Cheney Stadium, which really is great. I mean, it's an awesome place, and you should spend more time there. I should spend more time there. Minor league baseball is awesome. It's a beautiful park, easy to get in, you know, reasonable tickets and a fun take and all that. You great promotions. It's a really cool place. But I went down to talk to Jared Kelnick, who obviously has been sent down on May, 13th, I think it was. And we haven't seen him since. Jerry told us yesterday that he didn't see him returning anytime soon. I asked him specifically, you know, with the suspensions, would we see Jared?
No, you know, we are committed to solving the career development of Jared Kelnick.
Yeah. He went on from there, obviously. But so I went down to talk to Jared yesterday and get a sense of what that looks like, how he's feeling emotionally. You remember how honest and open and raw he was when we talked to him in spring training. So I wanted to go down and see where he was at. What I heard was in many ways encouraging, and in a couple ways, I think maybe a little concerning. So I think that he's got his head screwed on straight. The question is, where does he go from here? So I think you guys will want to hear this. Jared Kelnick, two words that he used a lot. One was process and the other was emotion. You'll hear both of those next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710 and more of the Seattle Sports application as well.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports Station.
It is Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com as well. Mike Salk Show and here with Jared Kelnick. And, man, we haven't seen you since spring training. We had a nice conversation when we were down in Peoria. How's it going here for you?
Good. I mean, I'm enjoying my time with the guys down here. The coaching staff has been great. We came off an exciting win last night, so it's all good.
You got your Electric Factory shirt on, so it's been kind of a year where you start in Seattle, you make your way down here. When we were in spring training, we were talking about last year and sort of your mom coming and helping you out and all of that. Right. Take me back to May 13th, which is when you came back to Tacoma this year. What are your emotions like on that day?
I would say it's just determined to kind of get my my swing in line, but also to just get down here and focus on my process. And that was big for me coming down here to, you know, help this team win ball games and continually to be the player that I am and remind myself of the player that I am. And again, like I said, just focus on the process.
So what does process mean in that case? What take me through what a process means for you?
I mean, I think it can mean a lot of different things. I mean, from offense to defense to your mentality at the plate. But, you know, process means different for a lot of different people. So it's kind of hard to just, you know, solidify it as one thing. But mine's been pretty good so far.
What's the frustration level like? You're up there. You'd had success, obviously, in September last year. We all got a chance to see what Jared Kelnick is capable of. And you're going out night after night. It's not going the same way it was. What is the confidence like? How do you stay up every day?
I mean, it's definitely hard. And I think that coming down here was good to find success, find the type of player that I am. Don't have any voices in my ear anymore, to just focus on who Jared Kelnick is each and every night, and focus on the process, and that is just going to take care of itself.
So what are you discovering? Who is Jared Kelnick?
Just the type of player that I am. You know, I can affect the game in any aspect that is out, like on defense. I can do it at the plate. I can do it in the dugout. And that's the type of player that I am. And I know that I can maintain. I think that sometimes when a lot of stuff's thrown at you quick, when you go out to the big leagues and you have a lot of voices in your head, you know, things can speed up on you and you make emotional decisions. And this has allowed me to kind of slow it down. Instead of making an emotional decision, just focusing on the process and, you know, do my own thing.
When you say voices in your head, modern baseball is a lot different, right? You got a hitting coach and you've got your own personal coach and you've got an assistant guy and somebody who's bringing you stats and a video guy. How do you filter through all that?
It's hard. It's hard because, you know, you want to be, obviously when you're struggling, you want to do better. So you're trying to find any little thing to grab onto. And, you know, for me, there, you know, sometimes less is more. And whether it's swings, whether it's information I'm getting on the pitcher. And so when I came down here, we have just about the same information that we do in the big leagues, and you kind of understand what you really need and what you don't. So for me, it's understanding what I need on a nightly basis down here. And that's, again, part of the process that's allowed me to have my success.
So is it almost an information overload at some point?
Absolutely. I think sometimes you get too much information and it makes your mind spin. You can't just focus on being at the plate and being present with what you're trying to do and how the pitcher's trying to attack you.
Are you a tinker? I mean, it seems like you've gone through little changes to your stance and your swing and a leg kick, et cetera. Have you always been like that?
No, I haven't. I think that's a little bit of people being in my head and being in my ear, I guess. The good part about this coaching staff, especially down here, they really helped me. It just let me do my thing. Let me figure it out. And I think that's the only way that you can really find confidence in things is when you it comes from you and not from anybody else. And, you know, that's, I really appreciate the coaching staff down here in Tacoma as they've allowed me to do that.
Did you go back and talk to Mark McGwire again? I know you worked with him in the offseason. Yeah. What are those conversations like?
A lot of it is, we don't ever talk about mechanics. And we only talk about kind of how the pitcher's trying to attack me and what I'm trying to do, like where I'm looking for in the plate, and what I'm trying to do with that pitch, and it's really simple, and then about the process.
You seem like a confident guy, right? I mean, I've talked to you a couple of times. You certainly exude a level of confidence. Where do you find that balance of being confident even as the numbers aren't necessarily where you are, or you get come back down here to Tacoma? Where does the confidence stem from in those moments?
I just think because I know the type of player that I am. You know, I think the numbers that you see, like this year in the big leagues, that's not who I am. And I know that because you can't just come down here and put up numbers and then go back there and just be absolutely horrible. Like this, I think that there's a fine line. You know, maybe if I was hitting like 250 or something, but like 140, that's just not who I am. And I know that's not who I am because I know that, like, again, I talked about making emotional decisions. There was a lot of times when I was up there where the game was speeding up and I was making emotional swing decisions, and that was causing me to chase a lot.
So when you say an emotional swing decision, is that wanting it too much? What does that mean?
Sure. I mean, it could be a lot of different things. It could be, you know, the pitcher gets a call that you think is off the plate, and you're like, you got to be kidding me. And then, you know, you, in your mind, you're like, he's going to come right back to it because he just got it. And then instead of a fastball off the plate, he throws a changeup off the plate, and now you're swinging and you're early because you're trying to attack the pitch that's off the plate. That's not you.
And I would imagine the guys who are pitching in the majors are that much better than what you're seeing here.
100%. That's what they love. Like, the veteran guys have talked to me about it, how they love when, like, young guys, they can see how anxious they are in the box because they can just feed. They don't even have to throw it over the plate. They know that they're going to get them out. And it's kind of understanding that even when stuff isn't going your way, that to slow the game back down, breathe, and, you know, have them come to you and stick to your process.
You talked in spring training, I know, about staying relaxed, right? Not gripping the bat too tight. You talked about hitting the velo machine, right? And then as soon as you started wanting it too much, all of a sudden it went the wrong way. Did you run into the same problem this year?
I would say that a lot of it was I had voices in my head, and it caused me to, you know, tinker. You kind of brought that up. And it, anytime you tinker, it's hard to really commit to something. And so when you're not committing to something, you have inconsistency. So I think that why I've had success down here is because I've found something, an approach, and I've found a comfortability in the box that I found for myself. I didn't have anyone trying to find it for me. I've done it. I've tried to just replicate that every single night, and that's the consistent success that you're seeing.
So that seems hard. So you almost, because there have been so many voices, you've got to narrow it all down. And it sounds like, if I'm understanding you right, you're almost playing your own coach and trying to get back to your own process and your own voice.
I think that as a hitter and as a baseball player, you're your own best coach. Like, you, nobody knows how you feel. Like, there's going to be days where you just show up to the ballpark that you just don't feel good. And maybe your swing's a little bit slower today because you had a long flight or you had a long game the night before and a day game. Like, they're not going to know how you feel. You're never always going to feel exactly you felt like the night before. And so you have to just go out, trust the process, and focus on things that you can control and let the rest take care of itself.
Was there, I don't know how to ask this, was there almost a sense of relief when you came back down, kind of given where the numbers were at the time?
I knew I wanted to, when they sent me down, I mean, obviously you never want to come down. When I came down, I kind of looked at it as, you know, I can breathe and I can focus on my process and I can, find the type of hitter that I am again and just, you know, play my game. And then when they call me back up, I'll be ready to go.
Well, and I would imagine you say, I can breathe again. What's it like? You have a tough night. You're in the big leagues. You've had a couple of weeks in a row. You got to go to sleep at night. I mean, I know how hard it is for me to sleep sometimes. My job doesn't have nearly the same level of stress and all of that. Certainly, I don't have as many people watching me. We got like 7 listeners on this show. So how do you sleep at night when that's going on?
Oh, it's definitely hard, but you just kind of have to just eliminate it completely. And, you know, social media can be obviously tough for anybody. But you just try to, you know, listen to the people that you love that are in your corner, that you trust. And my parents have been really supportive throughout this whole thing. And Mark McGuire has been really supportive throughout this whole thing. And it's really been, this coaching staff down here in Tacoma has been really supportive of helping me get to, you know, the type of player that I am. And, you know, that's really what I leaned on.
Would you like to have been up there on Sunday at Anaheim?
Oh, no, because then I wouldn't want to get run the risk of getting suspended. But, no, obviously, you know, it is what it is. But
it would have been kind of nice to be there for it.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a hard question? And I don't, maybe I shouldn't ask you this, but I'll ask you anyway, because it's something that we've wondered about a little bit. And I was thinking about you and Julio and how you guys have come up together. You're a year older than him. You were always kind of one grade step above him, so to speak, right? You're in double A while he's in single A, etc. And you came up last year, struggled a little bit, came back down, and then kind of took off in September. Is it hard at all to see him succeeding? And I don't mean that you're not rooting for him or you're not happy for him, but is there a sense of, what the heck, that was what I was supposed to do? Why does it seem easier for him right off the bat?
I think the easiest answer is no, because, you know, Julio is a dear friend of mine. Outside of baseball, like, he's just a great individual. And he's a tremendous baseball player, obviously. And I think that what Julio's doing right now is strictly because he's focusing on Julio and what gets Julio right. And I think that is what is leading to his success. He's doing it consistently, and I think that that's what you're seeing. And, you know, that's kind of what I'm focusing on since I've been down here. And so that when I go back, you know, I can be right there with them. And, you know, I don't really look at it too much. Like, right now is a tough time. But, you know, 2, 3, 4 years from now, nobody's going to remember that I got sent down to Tacoma for 2 months or whatever it is.
What are you working on? What have they told you what you need to do to get back up to the big leagues?
I mean, I'm just down here really trying to focus on my process and be with my teammates and focus on winning games.
Well, it's good to see you, and it's good to see you out taking BP and all of it. And we are there are a lot of people still looking forward to seeing you back in the big leagues, whether it's this year, next year, whatever the case may be. You got a lot of fans still in Seattle getting ready to see you again. So thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, there is Jared Kelnick. I went down yesterday and did that interview with him sort of in one of the coaches' rooms. I really like Jared a lot. I want to be honest about it. I find him to be an incredibly interesting person. We'll talk to Brock coming up in 2 minutes, obviously, and I want to talk to him a ton about the Pac-12, Big Ten type thing. But I really did enjoy talking to him. I loved when we met him in spring training, Justin, and then I enjoyed it yesterday as well. He took the time to say, hey, no, let's go get off the field and find a quiet place. And, hey, coach, he asked the coaches if he could use a room. I think he's a good person.
Mm-hmm.
He's in a really weird spot.
Yeah.
And I think you can hear a little of it there about, you know, who to listen to and who to trust and how to trust himself and his process and not get caught up in the emotions.
You mentioned that a few times. Voices in his head.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's a kind of a lot in there. You've got a texter here saying, is he blaming the Mariners coaching staff? I don't know. I don't know that I hear that, but I think if you want to hear that, you can. I didn't hear it, and I didn't sense that in talking to him. I got the sense he was just like, hey, I got to get everything out of my head and just get back to who I am.
That's what I thought, too, because you asked if he's a tinkerer and because he's been playing with the swing. He said no. Normally, it never has been.
Right.
So he's more him.
I think so, and I thought the description of, you know, an emotional response to an at-bat and how you can get yourself out, yeah, I think that's a very real thing. But he's doing great down there. He seems like he's having fun when I saw him. I mean, he was smiling and laughing and having fun with his guys. He had a couple more hits last night. He's been hitting for power. He'll be back eventually. But I'm not exactly sure where that's going to be. Let's talk to Brock.
Brock and Salk.
With my brains and your brawn, we'll make an excellent team.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30, presented by Top Fitness Store on the Mike Salk Show.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Hey, buddy.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Yeah.
Not great.
It was a rough day yesterday.
I know. I called
those
you.
Those of us on the West Coast.
I figured you were busy.
My parents came to town yesterday, so yeah. I'm sorry I didn't get back to you.
No, I figured it was. Yep. I figured it was a rough day. I was really just reaching out to kind of offer a word of support. It couldn't have been fun yesterday for you.
No, it was one of those days that just I mean, we've talked about this a lot, right? College athletics is the one place that this red-blooded capitalist becomes a socialist. And yet it's also, unfortunately, the one place where the socialist in you becomes a red-blooded capitalist and understands that everybody's got to look out for everybody's own best interests. And yesterday, just it felt that way. I thought, not even for myself. I mean, I wasn't sad for myself. My time has come and gone. Had some incredible years there. My nephew, obviously, is still at the University of Washington. But I thought about all of my Coug buddies yesterday. I thought of my Oregon State buddies yesterday. Those are the markets that were shook. I mean, big time. Wondering what in the world, you know, texting with Kyle Brown yesterday and reached out to a few folks in the conference. And, you know, there was pretty much consensus other than the folks at USC and UCLA that this was the worst day in the history of the conference. That was an exact quote from somebody in authority in this conference. And that's what it felt like yesterday. Mm.
I think maybe the hardest part is they didn't see it coming.
No.
I mean, it's not even just that they weren't invited. They didn't even know the party was happening.
Correct. Correct. I mean, that's pretty remarkable in this day and age,
yeah.
Man, especially in that market. That's not usually the way SoCal operates. And yeah, it brought me back to a year ago when I was at a dinner in the Big 12 Media Days in Dallas with the commissioner of the Big 12 Conference, a guy named Bob Bowlesby, Iowa guy, Stanford guy, super smart guy. We're at dinner, and it's like six, seven of us, right, from Fox, a couple of my big, big bosses at Fox, one of the deputy commissioners from the Big 12. We have dinner in Dallas. The next day, we all fly up to do Big 10 Media Days in Indianapolis, and the news breaks that afternoon that Oklahoma and Texas are leaving. And every one of us is like, what just happened? We just had dinner with the commissioner last night. Did he have any idea? And after the fact, he said no. Totally blindsided. And I saw, and I've seen Bob probably a half dozen times over the last year at different events, football games, and the animus and the vitriol were real. And everything that he said afterwards, like this, I'm totally blindsided. And I had no idea that Oklahoma and Texas and ESPN and everything in the SEC were working behind the scenes and had every one of their ducks in a row before it went public. And behind the scenes, USC and UCLA and the Big Ten and those ADs and the commissioner in the Big Ten, Kevin Warren, were doing all of their work like a duck that was calm on water and legs swimming underneath to have all of those ducks figuratively in a row. So when that was announced yesterday, consensus was had and the league and USC and UCLA agreed.
So how, I mean, what does UW do? Beg to be let in?
I don't know. What does Oregon do? What does Stanford do? What does Washington do? I think that those...
Does the Big Ten want them?
Those would become the three markets that the Big Ten, if they're interested in getting to 20, right? The Big Ten has been a reactionary, by and large, over the last few years, the new commissioner, a reactionary conference. This is a reactionary move to Oklahoma and Texas, leaving for the SEC. Now, does the SEC say, huh, okay, in this day and age, let's go grab Clemson and Florida State.
Right.
And I don't know, Duke, if we want some level of North Carolina for basketball, and we'll get to 20. Let's get to 20 in our super conference now. And then does the Big Ten say, great, we'll grab Stanford and Washington and Oregon and Utah, I don't know, name the fourth, and we'll get to 20. And whatever you can do, we can do, and we in our minds can do just as well or better. And we'll get to the same kind of numbers and split the pie similarly and aid our broadcast partners in Fox.
And then, you know what they can do after that? They can split off into the Big Ten West and the Big Ten North, and they can really just be the old Big Ten and the old Pac-12. The whole thing is ridiculous. This whole thing is so stupid. It really is.
It's really hard to absorb.
And I will say it again, Brock. The system is not set up for this. College football was never meant to have this much money put into it. And more than that, there's nobody in charge.
No.
There's nobody in charge. And so with no commissioner of the NCAA with the actual teeth to kind of organize the entire, you know, sport, you have chaos.
Yeah, yes.
You can't function like this.
No. And, you know, a couple years ago, it was things totally deconstructed. The NCAA realized and the Supreme Court told them, you have no authority and power over these student athletes in these colleges. And what they do, said, fine, we're out. We'll wash our hands. We don't want any lawsuits. We're not going to take anything on. And then it was just free for all, total free for all, transfer portal, total free for all, NIL, total free for all, whatever you can get. Just look out for your own best interests and do what you need to do individually and then ultimately collectively. And Texas and Oklahoma said, why are we competing with Iowa State and Baylor and Kansas football and sharing our money with them? Let's go to the SEC where that pot is even bigger.
I don't blame them.
Yeah, and you know what? USC and UCLA, and this is what kind of got me yesterday. If this news had broke, I don't know what, during our segment yesterday, I would have said to you, wow, this is a pretty strong ploy. The negotiations must be pretty hot and heavy for what USC and UCLA want to carve out in the distribution of the next TV deal for the Pac-12. Like this is they hit the nuclear button to say, we're for real. We want a different slice of the pie than everybody else in the Pac-12. We're bigger market. USC with Lincoln Riley is going to start winning, yada, yada, yada. And that's what I thought this was initially when the news broke.
Leverage, but no.
Yes.
They're just leaving.
But no. No,
they're just taking off.
They didn't even want necessarily to negotiate within the conference for that bigger slice and take, twice as much as Wazoo or Oregon State. They said, nope, we'd rather go to the Big Ten, feel that's more stable. That's the super conference we want to move into.
So the remaining teams, however many they are, maybe UW and Oregon get to go also, maybe not. The remaining teams don't have a ton of options, right? I mean, they can try to merge with the remnants of the Big 12 after everybody left that conference. Yep. They can try to invite sort of the next tier of San Jose State and, you know, whatever else is around, right? And try to backfill from below, which other conferences have done. But no matter what you do, you aren't going to be able to compete with the top tier conferences, and you're not going to be even close.
Well, unless, you know, and some of the rumblings and rumors and innuendo is, well, Oregon and Washington and Stanford and Cal is a Cal, I don't know, will they take less of a share in the Big Ten Conference?
Well, right, but okay, fine. Let's say they do that. But the remaining schools, maybe it's Arizona State, Oregon State, Wazoo.
Correct.
They're essentially then out of major college football. They're to become, I would think, more equivalent to a Sacramento State or something like that, right?
Well, where is it all going? I don't know. You don't know. Nobody knows. That is certainly, I think, the feeling yesterday that hit many in many of the markets in that you just mentioned.
Could that be better for some of those schools? Honestly. I mean, the reality is that for the last however many years, those schools have not been in really any competition to go to the college football playoff. Right. They might have good years. They might win a conference now and again, but they're not going to be an elite program in the current, even the former makeup of college football. Mm-hmm. Would it be better for some of those schools? And I don't know what the fans would say, but would it be better for them to lower the expectation level and play in a lesser conference or something like that?
I had a Cook friend tell me that and try to kind of paint that side of it. Is it, for Oregon State and for Washington State and just the size and the demographics and the revenue and the population and everything else, it may be better to compete in the Mountain West Conference with Utah State and Colorado State.
It might be more fun
Boise
for the fans.
State. Yeah, and you know what? We could win those conferences. We could win the Mountain West maybe a little bit more regularly, and we'll come into it with an advantage because of the facility improvement that we have had over the last, you know, 10 years because of the revenues that were made competing
at the highest end. Right, but the flip side of that is that, you know, the caliber of the player who wants to go there, if they're not, I mean, they're going to, it's going to drop.
It will, because all of a sudden the Max Borgie, who was wanted by Stanford, and the Christian McCaffrey lookalike, who could run 4.4, is now going to have and entertain offers and want to go where? Want to go to the power conferences to compete for the national championship. So, yeah, all in all, it was a tough one to absorb. It reminded me of the earthquake that I was in college, where I was sitting on the ground, where all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I was out on the field, this earthquake. And I know you experience earthquakes living in SoCal, but that was one of my first. And it was like, oh my gosh, what is happening? What in the world is going on? And when is this going to stop? This is the most surreal, out-of-body experience ever. Yesterday, fairly close to that, when that news hit and it became official, like, wow. This is an earthquake to Bill Walton's Conference of Champions, to the conference that I knew, that I loved, the traditions, the histories, the rivalries, the ability to drive to games, the vitriol, the sports hate that you have for many of these teams, and to watch it just all of a sudden like that, Mike.
Like that?
Yeah, kind of like that. Kind of like that. And with no... just nobody saw it coming, kind of like an earthquake. Just no idea that it was going to hit when it did.
Well, I'm sorry, man. I was thinking about you yesterday and how this had to hurt. Now, on the other hand, you work at Fox. Maybe great for Fox. Yeah. I mean, like Fox is right in the middle of all this, right? Yeah. I mean, you may get a lot more great games to do.
Yep. But as you know, Mike, when it comes to college athletics, I think of the whole.
Of course.
I think of everybody else.
It's when you're at your most giving.
Yes. Have a good weekend. We'll
see you,
talk
buddy.
Monday.
We'll talk Tuesday. We'll see about all that. I'll be back on the 6th.
I know you will. Well, enjoy the USFL title game.
Thank you.
Sunday night. I know you'll be watching.
Sure will. Love you long time.
Be
tuned
Bye.
In. There you go. I wish you wouldn't say that. There's Brock Heward. He joins me, of course, every morning at 7:45 and 9:30. And yeah, I figured yesterday would be kind of a tough day for him. All right. G. Scott, we'll talk a little bit more about this with him at 8:30. He obviously has his... he's pretty involved and invested in the recruiting world, of course, between his sons and his interest in that. So G will be in at 8:30. He's been begging to come in for like the last hour. So that's at 8:30. Before we get there, I do want to talk some Mariners. I want to come back to what we heard from Jared Kelnick, from Jerry DePoto, and try to figure out where this thing is going, all the while watching this team winning games and doing it the way we originally envisioned it. So that's next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710 Seattle Sports app.